Let's consider this matter of lens, frame, perspective. Last week we said, who speaks for us? And as it turns out, it's a complicated question because the language itself, our mother tongue, our earth voice, is in development. So how could the lens of scholarship represent us? How could it possibly see the world right side up? What light we have that sees things right, issues from the earth-connected indigenous or screened-off artists, it's always dismissed as idiosyncratics. Entertaining, perhaps, but certainly not science, which we're taught to see as the only route to truth, which power defines as only that which can be proved by means of the process of inventing boxes which pounds life into static objects, inserted then into their analysis, and used to manufacture the big explanations that each generation gets modified versions to further the illusion of progress. In packaging that's clever, engaging, and interesting, lodged in the story, the wide sweep of history, which the middle ranks all get for training. But the process never uses the lens of the people. It has long ago condemned, power has, the use of authentic language, our mother tongue, which, were it allowed utterance, issuance into the broad, unbounded air, would tell us that the health and happiness and joy of the earth is all that matters, that we are life, not a system, not a process's servants, and our story must not just be retold and rewritten, but newly invented, using our newly regained voices, our original ones, certainly, but also different, as they've been made old by millennia-long sadness, with a past that's always with us, our ancestors' suffering. All of it is in us, all of it in our voices, all of it suffused through our language. So when I read in the new book by Wallerstein et al., quote, all these prognostications of the five collaborators in writing the book are akin to stress tests in civil engineering or, as we have all now heard, in banking. None of us bases our prognoses of capitalism in terms of condemnation or praise. We have our own moral and political convictions. But as historical sociologists, we recognize that the fortunes of human societies, at least in the last 10,000 years, beyond the elementary level of hunter-gatherer bands, have not turned on how much good or evil they produced. Our debate is not whether capitalism is better or worse than any hitherto existing society. The question is, does it have a future? Unquote. Remember what Karl Popper told us in his second volume of The Open Society and Its Enemies? I guess he wasn't an historical sociologist. Thank the earth, thank life. Thought belonged to him who gave it. What, quote, what people have in mind when they speak of the history of mankind is rather the history of the Egyptian, Babylonian, Persian, Macedonian, and Roman empires, and so on, down to our own day. In other words, they speak about the history of mankind, but what they mean, what they've learned about in school, is the history of political power, a cruel and at the same time childish affair, the idolatrous worship of power, of success. Unquote from Karl Popper. And it seems to me the punditry, self-servingly, if unconsciously, way overcomplicate things. For all of power's history can be reduced to these four words: keep the people duped. When I read the words of Wallerstein et al., I'm struck by the fact that throughout this long, brutal span of power riding our back, the minute we're born, we're told our happiness is irrelevant. What's the opposite of that?